evening and welcome to From the Frontline. It's good to have you with us this evening. In studio with me this evening is Peter Hammond. I'm his wife, Lenora Hammond. And today we're looking at an interesting situation coming up, which most people will know that the American elections are 1 week away. But what we want to look at is how it affects foreign policy. How does it affect us as Africans? What is the African perspective on this? Peter, tell us what you think about that.
Well, as a missionary to the persecuted church over the last more than 38 years, I've traveled in 42 countries, been involved in ministering in 38 countries over the last 38 years. And in that time, I've been involved in 8 wars and 3 revolutions. And I've seen firsthand the often disastrous consequences of White House policies. Now, I don't know how many American voters think foreign policy, let alone the persecuted church, when they choose who to vote for or whether to vote or how to vote. But for us in Africa, U.S. foreign policy often directly affects believers in Africa and the Middle East.
So ideas and elections obviously have consequences. So if you have an election that goes one way, it could have disastrous consequences for the rest of the world, especially the Middle East and Africa. But if it goes another way, it could be very beneficial for us. So
very much so. So, for example, when I was a teenager, I was being brought up in Rhodesia, and I well remember the grief and mourning that took place in Rhodesia when, in 1976, Jimmy Carter was elected. We all understood, even though I was just a high school student, we understood that this was going to sound the death knell for our country, because Jimmy Carter made it one of his highest foreign policy goals to force the people of Rhodesia to hand over to Robert Mugabe's ZANU Marxist terrorists. And the American people doubtless didn't realize, or maybe probably weren't even thinking foreign policy, but Jimmy Carter put as his highest foreign policy goals to betray American allies, such as the Shah of Iran, which is one of the most stable allies of America, was betrayed at the hands of the Ayatollahs. And that story isn't finished yet. That's continuing 40 years later. But in my country, Rhodesia, we were betrayed by Jimmy Carter. He put as such enormous pressure on betraying Rhodesia, and as he did to the Nicaraguans and many other countries. In fact, it was calculated 13 countries fell to communism during the 4 years of the presidency of Jimmy Carter. And in most cases, they didn't just fall to communism, they were actually betrayed into the hands of communist revolutionaries, such as the Sandinistas in Nicaragua or the Marxist ZANU terrorists of Mugabe in Zimbabwe. And this was their goal. So the American people removed Jimmy Carter from the presidency 40 years ago. But the long-suffering people of Zimbabwe are still stuck with Carter's legacy in the form of Robert Mugabe's murderous Marxist dictatorship. And in fact, they're suffering 40 years later, to the extent that the situation in Rhodesia when I was brought up was one of the greatest agricultural economies in all of Africa, the highest literacy and educational standards in all of Africa, the lowest crime in all of Africa, virtually no unemployment. And Rhodesia was something of a paradise, even though we were involved in the war in the 1970s. But after the betrayal of Rhodesia, and as Ian Smith, the Prime Minister, said, we were never beaten by our enemies, we were betrayed by our friends. Mm. And the result now is 95% unemployment. More than half the total population of Zimbabwe have fled the borders and are living outside of its borders. There is rampant, not just corruption, but starvation in Zimbabwe. The 5,600 commercial farms were seized, expropriation without compensation, under the land reform or dekulakization communist policies in Zimbabwe. And the country has since been starving and needing tons, millions of tons of food and aid coming into the country. Rhodesia never needs foreign aid, ever. And it didn't matter how bad the droughts were and so on, Rhodesia was always self-sufficient. But Zimbabwe has been a complete basket case since. And one needs to just bear that in mind, that that was the result of people voting Democratic candidate Jimmy Carter back in 1976.
Now, I remember the very first elections in the U.S. that I was able to participate in were the 1980 Ronald Reagan elections. And it was with great euphoria that we watched him come to power. Now, he left much more of a legacy of liberty. How did Reagan's policies, in comparison to Carter's, affect the rest of the world?
Well, again, I remember I was in the South African Army and in the infantry doing my training when this the news came through, Ronald Reagan's won. And we knew then this was good. This was great. Jimmy Carter's out the picture. And Ronald Reagan was known as an anti-communist. He is known as somebody who was for freedom. And he had spoken in his election campaigns of putting freedom on the offensive. And he did, because he started to support anti-communist resistance movements who were able to help win the Cold War and bring down the Berlin Wall and the Iron Curtain. So the collapse of communism throughout Eastern Europe in 1989, which brought about such an era of religious freedom and unprecedented missionary activity, was a direct result of US foreign policy that stopped the appeasement of Jimmy Carter and the betraying of America's allies, and started to strengthen American allies, and started to defund the Marxists and to actually engage in such brilliant policies that brought about the collapse of the Soviet Union. People who don't know the full story can see films like In the Face of Evil, which we actually got at the Reagan Museum, which catalogues an incredible documentary, the campaign of Ronald Reagan, who was a lifelong crusader against communism. And to see the collapse of Soviet Union, how he worked together with Solidarity in Poland and with the Contras in Nicaragua, UNITA Freedom Fighters in Angola. In fact, I remember being in the bush, in the Bundu in Angola, back in 1986. And we had just been bombed and strafed during the day by Cuban forces and Soviet helicopter gunships and MiGs. And we were all pretty rattled, and we still had dirt and grime and bits of sticks and rubbish down our necks and in our clothes and from diving for cover. And we were sitting around the campfire that night in Angola, in what the Portuguese called the uttermost parts of the earth, the ends of the earth, Cuando Cabango province. And we listened to shortwave radio. And on the shortwave radio, lo and behold, in comes Ronald Reagan. And he's saying, we are going to send Stinger missiles to the UNITA Freedom Fighters in Angola. And there we were in the bush with UNITA in Angola, after having been bombed by the Cubans that day. And it was, to me, such an incredible experience. And that, at the end of that radio broadcast, one of the people there said, well, that would be nice, but will they do it? Yeah. But they did. In fact, the Stinger missiles came in, and I've got some delightful pictures, which are of shot-down helicopter gunships and MiGs taken down by US Stinger missiles in Angola. So I wrote the article, Ronald Reagan Saved Lives in Angola, which is on our website, which just documents, it's got some of those great pictures, how a presidential election can save the lives of Christians in Africa.
Yeah. So America was plainly despised in the days of Jimmy Carter from a foreign perspective, but under Ronald Reagan, America was respected. This is just the rest of the world looking at the US.
There's no doubt about it. It's true. As one politician said, there's nothing communists despise more than weakness. There's nothing they respect more than strength. Mm-hmm. And America was seriously despised in the days of Jimmy Carter and was greatly respected under Ronald Reagan. In some quarters, maybe feared, but in a positive sense, because they respect strength. They definitely despise weakness and vacillation.
And what about Clinton? What happened during his confused and erratic reign?
Oh, that was actually quite serious, because as a missionary of the persecuted, I noticed that in the 1990s, persecution radically increased. There was systematic terror bombing campaigns of churches and hospitals and schools, and especially the National Islamic Front government in Sudan, greater attacks on Christians in Nigeria. And I personally experienced artillery and aerial bombardments, rocket bombardments while ministering in churches in Sudan. I well remember arriving, I'd been flying during the election up to Kenya, and I still didn't know the results of the elections as I flew from Kenya into Sudan. And as I arrived at the Maridi airstrip in Equatoria province in Sudan, I came out of my Cessna caravan, a plane that we had hired, a missionary aircraft, and on the runway was the governor of Equatoria, one of the resistance fighters. And he said to me as I landed, and this is the first that I heard the results of the American elections in 1996, how could the Americans elect Clinton again? And my heart fell, and I realized this was going to have a disastrous consequence for all of us in Sudan. And indeed, in the next 4 years, we experienced even more aerial bombardments and even more terror bombings. And our mission station in Mundri was bombed 10 times. The hospital up the road that we helped Samaritan's Purse set up was bombed at least 10 more times. There were terror bombings in the Nuba Mountains. One church in Minnesota was bombed 12 times in 18 times in a 12-month period. One bombing 21 people died, including two teachers and 19 students. And these terror bombings, it was something that was not happening before. It certainly didn't happen in the days of Ronald Reagan. I know that American foreign policy doesn't control the destiny of the whole world, but it's a major influence. Mm. And obviously the evil comes out of the ideologies of Marxism, or in this case, Islamic Jihad. But there was no doubt that U.S. foreign policy had basically allowed the Muslims to do what they wanted, and the radical jihadists saw this as an opportunity to just attack Christians. Mm. So it was very bad. We were so downcast. I don't think Americans understand just what an impact their foreign policy has on Christians all over the world, especially the Middle East and North Africa.
Well, and the Clinton era sort of set up the terrorist attack on the 11th of September, because that was, he had sort of paved the way for that to happen. But then America responded in quite a dramatic way, and that then brought about a relative amount of peace after that in terms of the Middle East.
Yes. So, for example, amongst the different things that happened during the Clinton era was a lot of meddling in the Middle East, as is unfortunately particularly common during Democrat elections in particular. Democratic administrations meddle a lot. And you may recall that there was this terror bombing on the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi and in Dar es Salaam. So both Kenya and Tanzania, the American embassies, were targets of attack. A lot of people died and were injured in those things. And then immediately afterwards, Clinton sent a whole lot of cruise missiles into some camps and pharmaceutical places in Khartoum in Sudan and up in Afghanistan. And as a result, a counterattack was that Planet Hollywood in Cape Town on our waterfront was bombed. And we were in the waterfront the day after, and saw the police forensics and do not cross, and the crime scene of this exploded, terrible, people crippled and so on, some poor soul from Britain just here on holiday victim. And so the Planned Hollywood bombing was a direct result, and it's this kind of chaotic nonsense that happened, because, you know, we bomb you, you bomb us, and next thing you know, some Brit in Cape Town on holiday gets his legs blown off because of what? Mm. And it was that kind of, what do they think happens? You can't send cruise missiles into another country without some kind of counter reaction. And one of the results of America's improved security in their own country is they decide to hit some target in Cape Town. Mm. And the amount of people in Tanzania, Kenya and so on who suffer the consequences. But again, do people realize there's always consequence? Everything has a consequence, and elections have consequences, and bombings of foreign countries have consequences. Mm.
So, but in the retaliation of the September 11th attacks brought back a relative amount of stability just after that, isn't that right?
Well, yes. It was extraordinary that the moment the Taliban, which was about the most radical regime and one of only three regimes in the world that actually recognized the very extreme government in the Taliban in Afghanistan, was the Sudan government. And so when the Taliban were toppled, suddenly we found the National Islamic Front government of Sudan stopped bombing immediately of churches in northern Sudan, South Sudan. And we suddenly found a relative peace and stability coming from 2002 on, because it seemed that freedom was on the offensive and there was consequences, and radical Islamic regimes suddenly stopped offensive actions, bombings ended, and we could suddenly do work in the Nuba Mountains without fear of being bombed, and it was quite extraordinary the amount of advance that could be done. So there's no doubt that, in fact, that led to the actual peace treaty in Sudan, and the peace arrangement was intriguing, because in 2004, which you'll recall was the second election where George Bush was running for a second term, the government of Sudan and South Sudan had been at the negotiation table discussing peace, and there'd been no fighting effectively from 2002 to 2004. But at this point, the talk was, if the Democrats win, the war starts again. But if the Republicans win, then they'll make peace with the South. And it was directly concerned American foreign policy. Mm. And the moment the results came in, they signed the peace agreement with South Sudan, accepting their right to secede, and that they would have a referendum in 2005, and that ultimately by 2011 they could be independent if and that was all decided the moment the results came in for the 2004 election. So plainly, South Sudan's independence, even, they saw as a direct result on the ground of American elections. And that's what my friends throughout South Sudan and Nuba Mountains, they understood even before the time the US elections would make all the difference as to whether the war continued or whether it stopped and South Sudan's secession was recognized.
So I would imagine that the South Sudanese knew and understood more about the US elections than your average American does, really, because they think only very insular about their own sort of little speck of land up there, and they don't really ever consider what happens to the rest of the world.
Sadly not. No.
So after this Republican reign, in comes the nightmare of Obama, and everything changes again.
Well, after Barack Hussein Obama became President of America, I would say the greatest catastrophe in the history of the church in the Middle East took place since the 8th century, because the so-called Arab Spring revolutions, which was nothing of the sort, was a Christian winter. There was no Arab Spring. It was an anti-Christian revolution. And it was sponsored, supported, encouraged by the US State Department, which you'll recall was under Hillary Clinton. And the Obama regime deliberately made the highest priority to topple stable American allies in the Middle East. And it was said before Obama that America's most important stable ally in the Arab world was Egypt. And by toppling the very stable government of Egypt, and bear in mind at that time, the Egyptian government put soldiers outside every single church of Egypt full time in protecting them from the Muslim Brotherhood in particular. And so Christians had a tremendous amount of freedom and protection under the Egyptian government before the Arab Spring. But with the US government promoting the so-called Arab Brotherhood, and the Muslim Brotherhood was described by Hillary Clinton as a force for peace and moderation in the Middle East. Now, bear in mind, the Muslim Brotherhood had assassinated Anwar Sadat, the president of Egypt, in the past. Muslim Brotherhood was the most radical extremist group that wanted to tear up the peace agreement, the Camp David agreement with Israel, to go back to war with the state of Israel, which would be incredibly destabilizing for the Middle East. And there was all sorts of things the Muslim Brotherhood wanted to do. And Barack Hussein Obama destroyed the American ally in Egypt, which was a major cause for stabilization, brought in the Muslim Brotherhood, who then went berserk, burning churches all over in just one weekend. Mm-hmm. There was 76 churches were burned, and the Bible studies bookshop was also burned out in Egypt, including churches that stood for over 1,000 years. Mm-hmm. So the persecution in the Middle East was terrible. And then the toppling of Libya, which had been stable. And this caused a ripple effect of millions of people fleeing across the borders into Europe, into Italy and all the way into Europe and up to Austria and Germany and Sweden. And millions upon millions, tens of millions of Muslims were lost their homes in the bombing and destabilization civil wars that followed, as particularly in Libya and Syria. And so the Arab Spring, which was the policy of Barack Hussein Obama's government. And again, I think many people miss the fact that Barack Hussein Obama, one of his first acts in the White House was to sign a law funding abortion in Africa. And the next thing he did was he signed a law to free a man that was caught by the Americans in Guantanamo Bay, who became the founder of ISIS, Islamic State. And then Ambassador Stevens, who wasn't an ambassador yet, but I'm talking about the same Ambassador Stevens was murdered in Benghazi in 2013. Ambassador Stevens was the bag man who took the first $500 million and helped ISIS get funded and started. And so the US government funded ISIS. Now, this isn't conspiracy theory. This isn't the theory. This was testified by to the US Senate by the Vice President and the US generals in charge of Joint Chiefs of Staff. Yes, we did start ISIS on the orders of Barack Obama, but we did it apparently in order to counter Syria, which was a peaceful state, which was a secular state, which was keeping Muslim terrorists at bay. But to topple the stable country where 6% of the population are Christians and to turn them into an Islamic radical regime, well, it seemed insane. So most of the Christians in Syria the vast majority support the government of Assad, which is a secular state and allows full religious freedom. And yet they had NATO and the USA and the CIA and so on supporting the radical Islamic terrorists, very much the same kind of terrorists who were accused of doing the 9/11 attacks. So absolute chaos reigned. And we lost out of the Middle East at least 4 million Christians. So in the year 2000 or 2010, there were in the Middle East 15 million Christians. Today there's only about 10 million. 4 to 5 million have fled or been killed. And so it's the only part of the world, in Operation World, where the Christian numbers have decreased. Because everywhere else, Christianity is growing in numbers and percentage. But in the Middle East, catastrophic destruction. We would, considering these Christians in the Middle East had endured 1,400 years of Islamic persecution and intimidation and harassment. But what happened on the Arab Spring, as a direct result of US foreign policy, has so destabilized the Middle East, you couldn't put a million missionaries in the Middle East to undo the damage that's been done by losing 4 million local Christians.
Wow. It's just extraordinary the way the US thinks that they have to meddle with the rest of the world. They need to get their own house in order first. But the other thing that the American foreign policy affects is individual lives, not just so much in a warlike situation, but lives are at stake when hundreds of millions of US taxpayer dollars are pouring into Africa to fund Planned Parenthood. And that's just inconceivable, because what's that got to do with America in the first place?
Well, it doesn't really, but that's true. So one of George Bush's first actions as president in 2001 was to stop US funding of Planned Parenthood abortions in Africa. So you could say that George Bush's policies, whether you like him or agreed with his policies or not, Africans notice that he stopped US funding of Planned Parenthood to the tune of hundreds of millions of dollars were withheld from providing abortions in Africa. So he definitely saved lives. But 8 years later, one of the very first acts of Barack Hussein Obama as president in 2009 was to release hundreds of millions of US taxpayers' dollars to fund Planned Parenthood abortions in Africa. So while George Bush Jr. actually saved lives in Africa, practically, Barack Hussein Obama actually funded the killing of millions of babies in Africa through Planned Parenthood funding with US taxpayers' money. And I don't know how many US taxpayers are aware that American tax dollars goes to fund Planned Parenthood killing babies in Africa, or for that matter, promoting LGBTQ gender confusion studies and advocacy and all that throughout Africa. And it's very clear that Hillary Clinton, for example, made clear in 2016 her enthusiastic, wholehearted support for Planned Parenthood and abortion agenda. So it's interesting, in 2017, when President Donald Trump came to power, one of his first acts in the White House in the very first week was to stop US taxpayer funding of Planned Parenthood abortions in Africa. So plainly, it seems to be a clear pattern that a Democrat president funds abortions in Africa and around the world, but especially in Africa, and a Republican presidential candidate defunds it. So just from a pro-life point of view, if a person doesn't understand anything else, Democrat vote is for abortion, Republican vote is against abortion.
So it was almost like a two-pronged approach. Under Obama, not only was he undermining the stability of the Middle East and helping to create ISIS, which killed, 5 million people.
Well,
but then he also funded...
removed them. They fled or destroyed or were killed. They were beheading Christians, but of course many others fled. The fact is, Middle East is now in a deficit of 5 million less Christians than it was before him.
But then the other prong would be that he's funding the abortion industry. And of course, they don't call it that. They call it, what do they call it? Women's
reproductive
health,
rights.
Reproductive rights, etc.
Yes.
And I'm sure that there are things that happen in Africa that we would also be horrified and that we would also oppose. For example, female circumcision and these forced virginity tests and that sort of thing. So I think women's health does need to be considered on a continent where women have very little rights and very little say. So I do think that they need to be supported. But the moment you fund abortions, then you're undermining the next generation of Africans. So why is it, do you think, that it's the Democrats versus the Republicans? Do you think that the Republicans are generally more Christian in their perspective than the Democrats are? I mean, is that fair to say?
It would be correct to say now, James Dobson made that point very clearly, that he said that right now to support the Democrats is to support abortion and secular humanism in the schools and sex education in the classroom and perversion and child abuse. And so it has reached that stage. But it's interesting to note that there was a time that the Republicans were red. You know, back in the days of Abraham Lincoln, their symbol was red because they had a lot of Marxists, a lot of 1848ers who had been part of Karl Marx's revolutions in America. So the Republican Party started out very red, and that's why they still have the red tie. And over the years, interestingly, Republicans have, especially since the time of Teddy Roosevelt, at the turn of the last century, there was a tremendous swing of the Republicans became more and more conservative. And the Democrats, which used to be very conservative, have become more and more secular humanist. And in fact, the Democratic Party now has effectively been hijacked by the Communist Party of the United States. And if anyone doubts this, go on to the Communist Party USA website, which I've done. You go onto the Communist Party USA website, not only do you find you can buy Lenin baseball caps, Lenin t-shirts, Lenin mugs and ballpoint pens, credit cards accepted, which sounds awfully capitalist to me. But at any rate, but on it, the Communist Party USA has for years now said, in fact, this is now, I've noticed this for decades, this is since the 90s, Communist Party USA says, the Communist Party USA is not putting up a candidate in the next election, but advise all comrades to vote for the Democratic candidate. So that's been since the Clintons. The Communist Party, which used to put up candidates like Gus Hall, for example, in every election, the Communist Party used to, but that's a long time ago. They haven't seen the need to put up a candidate since they've no doubt captured enough of the control, not to say everyone in the Democratic Party is communist, of course, but it means the agenda's become more and more in terms of the communists. And if you doubt that, go and look at the Communist Party agenda, which is published into the congressional record, and you see what their goal was. Everything from state-controlled education, state-controlled teachers, teachers licensed by the state, textbooks produced by the state, compulsory education in state-controlled schools, and all the rest of it going through. This is a completely Marxist agenda. The Central Reserve Bank controlled as well by what they call the Federal Reserve, which is not federal and it's got no reserves and not a bank. All of these things are Marxist ideologies. The fact that the state can own so much land and that they can interfere in your daily lives, as has been seen with this lockdown debacle, lockdown lunacy, these are Marxist agendas. The fiddling with taxes to the point that they can even tax inheritance, which was never accepted in history, and it's anti-Christian, forbidden in the Bible to tax inheritance. I mean, your ancestor who's willed this to his children or grandchildren, he's paid taxes. Why are you paying taxes on what was already taxed? And you can continue, but Marxist agenda has now so infiltrated the Democratic Party so that they are pro-abortion, pro-perversion, pro-LGBTQ, even round to defund the police and all the rest of it, that yes, I think people, they mustn't think back, but you know, the Democratic Party used to have such great people, and they did. There were some great people in the Democratic Party, but that's long ago. And there are some nice people in now, and there are Christians amongst it, but the policies now are thoroughly anti-Christian.
So if it's fair to say that Ronald Reagan saved lives in Angola, is it also fair to say that the Trump administration has saved lives in Sudan?
There is no doubt about it. In fact, the long-suffering persecuted Christians in Nubans have enjoyed over 3 years of relief from decades of scorched earth and aerial bombardments by the government of Sudan, because we were astounded. I didn't realize this because the news, I subscribe to a lot of news sources and independent newsletters, and I never picked this up, but we sent a team to Sudan in at the end of 2017, and they were stunned. There's a ceasefire up there. That's extraordinary. We planned an even more ambitious one early in March in 2018. Complete peace, no bombings. What's going on here? And the schools were gathering. The aerial bombardments had ended. They were rebuilding churches. They were able to be digging wells and all sorts of things were happening. And so when we discovered this, people said, oh no, Donald Trump said to the Sudan government, I know what you want. You want an end to sanctions. Let me tell you what I want before you get an end to sanctions. 12 months, no bombing, no offensive actions whatsoever in the Nuba Mountains, in South Kordofan, or in Blue Nile and Darfur. And lo and behold, the government of Sudan adhered to it. For 12 months, there was no bombings or terror attacks at all, or ground offensives on the South Kordofan, Nuba Mountains, Blue Nile, or Darfur. And so US sanctions were lifted. Well, next thing is, we see people screaming blue murder against Donald Trump. How could he lift economic sanctions on this terror-sponsoring Sudan government? Well, what they didn't say is that it had been in response to, you don't attack and bomb the Christians in the south, and we'll lift economic sanctions within 12 months. And the government of Sudan adhered to it. And now it's gone even further. We've, during this last time, smuggled in over 300,000 Bibles and Christian books into the Nuba Mountains of Sudan in the last 3 years, which is would have been unthinkable. Distribute to over 263 schools and minister to over 100 churches. These things could not have been done. When I was going in the Nuba Mountains during the Clinton era and so on, we were being bombed the whole time. There was no meeting of schools. Everyone was hiding in the hills and the caves because of the terror bombings and the scorched earth of the governor of Sudan. So I actually wrote a letter to Donald Trump, which people can see on our website, thanking him for his intervention, which I think has been ignored or missed by most people. Most people have not realized that Donald Trump, in his businessman-like way, the art of the deal, has negotiated a deal in South Sudan that has now led to they've arrested the government of Sudan's dictator of 30 years, that's Omar al-Bashir. He's on trial for genocide, amongst other things, and corruption and so on. They've made peace treaties with the South, even with the Nuba Mountains and Darfur and Blue Nile. They're moving, transitioning to civilian government. They're offering elections. They've abolished the apostasy laws, which were killing Christians, Muslims who'd convert to Christianity, they'd be killed for apostasy. And Christians could be executed for what they called blasphemy, meaning they said something that was considered offensive to Muhammad. And now they're talking about religious freedom in Sudan. So, look, we haven't seen the end of this, but what I'm saying is in the last 3.5 years, we've had unprecedented peace, freedom, and opportunity for ministry in Sudan. Mm. And the people on the ground in Sudan say, well, that's because of Donald Trump making an art of a deal with the Sudan government. And right now, the Sudan government, a lot of them are actually in jail and on trial, and there's a whole new civilian military transitional government that are giving every week or month you hear new things that just boggle the brain of somebody who's worked in Sudan for decades. I've never seen anything like it. So,
and I bet that's not coming across on CNN.
No, I don't know that even any conservative programs in America have picked this one up, but to us, this makes all the difference in the world to people who are living under terror, who can now go about their lives and build churches and schools and plant gardens with every hope of harvesting their own crops. And you know, for the people, Sudan has made a world of difference. Mm-hmm.
So back to what we started with, if ideas have consequences, and if what we sow, we reap, there are consequences for every action, including the U.S. elections. So we would just like to say that the United States needs to be much in prayer and seek the wisdom of God as they approach this critical election in November 2020. If the people that are affected in by the policies of the United States, a lot of this results in the persecuted church. So talk to us just a little bit in closing about the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church.
Yes, we have been for now over 25 years promoting the International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, which is a great initiative. And in fact, it's the largest prayer movement in the world, not only praying for the persecuted church, but praying with the persecuted church. We believe that there's, on some years, we've had over 100,000 congregations taking part in this initiative. And IDOP, International Day of Prayer for the Persecuted Church, it's run by different ministries of the Persecuted Church, so Open Doors, Voice of the Martyrs, Frontline Fellowship, many other good groups. And so we run IDOP Africa. So if you go to the www.idop-africa, you get our website that we're maintaining, which has got films, videos, footage, articles, PowerPoints, lectures, a whole range of good materials that will help people to educate your congregation about the persecuted church, get insights about the changing, dramatically changing situations in places like Sudan, for example. There's short, sharp, powerful, well-produced films like the 14 Minutes Missions to the Nuba Mountains of Sudan, which is also available in German and in French. And, of course, books like Faith Under Fire in Sudan, including e-books and In the Killing Fields of Mozambique, Holocaust, Rwanda, going through, even when doors closed, going on. So a lot of tremendous good resources, presentations, videos, PowerPoints. So IDOP Africa is one great resource. We need to communicate to people, especially in the remaining days before this election in America. There's no doubt that millions of people died throughout Africa, Asia, and the Middle East because of the foreign policies of Jimmy Carter. And tens of millions continue to suffer to this day as a result of Jimmy Carter's foreign policy legacy. He might have meant well, who knows his motives, but the fact is, the people in Iran, the people in Zimbabwe, they can tell you that some of America's closest allies were betrayed by Jimmy Carter's State Department policies of actively betraying allies and pushing Iran over the Ayatollahs or Rhodesia into the hands of Marxist revolutionaries. So the end result is that Iran's continuing to be a volatile part of an extremely volatile Middle East, whereas it used to be an ocean of stability. And the full extent of the chaos caused by Obama's foreign policy in the Middle East are yet to be calculated. Mm. I look at 2 Chronicles 19, verse 2. Should you help the wicked and love those who hate the Lord? Therefore, the wrath of the Lord is upon you. And that is something that's just so important that we have got to stress to our friends and neighbors and family members and congregation members ideas of consequences, what we sow, we reap. There's consequence for every action. And America being the greatest country in the world, economically, politically, culturally even, although very sad considering what a negative influence Hollywood has, but there's consequences for what happens in America. Both blessings that come from good churches and authors such as James Kennedy and Adrian Rogers and outstanding materials of some of your great authors and works. But then there's negative that comes, not just from Hollywood, but from the State Department, Foggy Bottom. Mm. I've been there, and let me tell you, a lot of the people there are hardcore anti-Christian Marxists. I hope they get drained, but at the moment, I think there's still a lot of evil emanating from the US State Department. And so we must pray that our Christian brothers and sisters in America will be in a lot of prayer and seek the wisdom of God as they approach this election. Now, particularly I'm concerned about many people I've spoken to who said, I've never voted or haven't voted since Ronald Reagan. Or I spoke to people back in 2017 said, you know, I hadn't voted since the time of Ronald Reagan, but I turned out in 2016 because I thought this businessman, Donald Trump, he's talking my kind of language. He's addressing issues I haven't heard addressed. I've got more confidence in a businessman than I do in a professional politician. And so there are many people who said, I hadn't voted for years. Mm. And some said, I'd never voted ever. Mm. Who did then? Mm. But I would hope that there's going to be people too on this occasion who'd realize we all have an obligation of voting. May there not be a single American Christian who absents themselves from a duty of voting. It's not just a privilege, it's a duty. And it's not just American lives at stake. There's a lot of us in Africa praying that you'll make wise choices, not just for the blessing and good of your own country, which we pray for, but for the good of Christians in the Middle East and in Africa as well, please.
Now, you've got other websites that people can refer to because you've done some presentations, written some articles. For example, one is called Biblical Principles for Using Your Vote. And again, this is something maybe people haven't even considered because we've been so indoctrinated with the separation of the church and the state. And I would venture to guess that there's many Christians that don't realize, as you just said, it is really their duty to vote. So there's lots of articles and resources. Where can people go to find those specifically if they're not necessarily interested in IDOP or interested even in missions, but perhaps they just want to know more about the foreign policy stories? I'm sure you've got lots to say.
Yes, we do. For example, we've got a website just called SA, that's short for South Africa, savotersguide.com. Now, you may not be so interested in how our political parties stand, but there's the articles on there which deal with things like biblical principles for true freedom, biblical principles for using your vote, and biblical principles of government and God, governments, and the Ten Commands. And if people go onto the Frontline Mission essay.org, they'll find not only articles, but also audios and videos and PowerPoints on freedom betrayed, Herbert Hoover's secret history of the Second World War, and perverted US agenda destabilized Nigeria, how Obama betrayed a Christian government in Nigeria into the hands of the Muslim radicals, a man who used to be a dictator, actually, who supported the terrorists, by destabilizing the Nigerian government. And this, for example, came about when US president was pushing the gay marriage agenda. 2013, Obama came on the most expensive American presidential visit ever. And he made his number one message, gay marriage, which went down like a lead balloon in Africa. there were people in Africa, such as the president and vice president of Kenya, who said, people who have ruined their own country should not presume to come here and tell us the way forward. Mm. And there were, for example, a president in Kenya also said that gay marriage is unchristian, it is inhuman, it's un-African, we will never tolerate it. And you could just see he really misunderstood the climate and the convictions of the average African. And one of the countries he targeted was Nigeria, who at that stage had a Christian president, Goodluck Jonathan. They involved in a terrible war against the Boko Haram Islamic terrorist group. And there were hundreds of girls in Nigeria who had been kidnapped by the Boko Haram terrorists. And it was testified in court, in Congress later, by a US general that the American military, through the espionage network and satellite surveillance, had identified exactly where the girls were, the kidnapped Nigerian girls, and where the leadership of Boko Haram was. And if they'd been allowed to pass on information, the Nigerian military could have seen not only the rescue of all those girls, but the end of the Boko Haram insurgency in Nigeria. But the White House forbade them to give any of those details to the Nigerian government under Goodluck Jonathan, as he's approaching an election where the safety of those girls was so important that many Christians said, bring back our girls or we will not vote. And millions of Nigerians refused to vote because the Nigerian government had failed to resolve the safety of these girls. And an American general testified, we were forbidden because Nigerian government opposed the White House's gay marriage policy. And so for the perverted agenda of the White House, they were willing to betray the largest nation in Africa, Nigeria, from a Christian president in the hands of a Muslim president at a critical election by withholding information that could have saved lives. So that's just one article, perverted US agenda to stabilize Nigeria. And that, I'm afraid, is just one of many. And we haven't even touched what FDR or Woodrow Wilson did in the White House, which led to how many more Christians being persecuted. So you'll find more details on this on the Reformation Society, SA.org website, frontlinemissionsa.org. But it's important for us to know, and certainly just mobilize your friends and neighbors and use your social media to see that America becomes a blessing to the rest of the world, not a burden. Mm.
And I think it's important for Americans to remember, as you've said before, they're not electing a pastor. They're electing a leader, someone who understands the economy, someone who understands foreign policy, someone who understands what will kickstart the U.S. economy again. And I think that's what Americans need to remember. They don't have to like President Trump, but they need to vote for the correct policies more than anything.
Yes, from my perspective, I'm a missionary to the persecuted church. So I'm thinking very much as a missionary, as somebody who's been in the trenches, literally being bombed and rocketed and strafed by the Islamic jihadists in Sudan or by the Marxists in Angola and Mozambique and been their prisoners. So for me, I understand some Americans have some strong convictions of, well, we can't vote for less of two evils and this, that, and the other. Well, I see this as a war. And in a war, you're not too fussy about your allies if you are able to save lives and defeat the enemy. Mm. And so in our situation, to me, it's very clear. Lives are at stake. And America can be a burden or a blessing to people. And I'm afraid the U.S. White House elections are more about foreign policy than anything else. And I think many people are only thinking domestic policy. Mm. So our plea is, please remember the foreign policy consequences of elections. Mm. And that's not just how one votes, but whether one votes. And I know some people either want to just make a protest vote or not vote at all. But unfortunately, that could strengthen the side of the others who are trying to rig the elections anyway with people who shouldn't even be eligible to vote. Mm. It seems strange to us that over here you need ID for almost everything. But in America, apparently you don't need your ID for elections. And
no, only when you want to buy a bottle of wine.
No, well, of course, that's more important about board an aircraft. But elections, apparently, it seems a lot easier to bring in people who aren't actually eligible voters. So it seems there's a fair bit of voter fraud that goes on in these elections, which makes it even more important for people of conviction to make sure their voices are heard.
Well, thank you for joining us this evening. Thank you, Peter, for your wealth of information. We pray your blessings upon you and your decisions you need to make, especially our American listeners, that God would guide you and would lead you in the week ahead and keep you safe. And we'll see you next week. God bless, and thank you for being with us.
God bless America.